Well, we are moving a little bit from theoretical to how can we use this information to make use of it, to make practical use in risk indicators of water contamination. We have seen this this morning, and I don't have to prove to you that preferential flow is important for contaminant transport. And it has been modeled at all different scales, at very small scale, at much larger scales, with numerical models, with stochastic models. But in the Canadian government asked us to develop risk indicator of water contamination for agricultural contaminants. And some of the teams that were working with the different contaminants, they said, we don't want to work with some standard equation and everything if we don't consider preferential flow, because we know that pesticide, we know that phosphorus and pathogens are a lot carried by preferential flow. So we ask ourselves, how can we put preferential flow into risk indicators? We look around and different people around the world have started using preferential flow at much larger scale for land management. And we think about Denmark, which they consider the soil structure, and Sweden, Australia, European Union, and in Quebec as well, that they started considering usually macropore flow or crack flow for heavy soils, but in a very, very simple way. And we ask ourselves, how can we use the information on preferential flow to help people deciding what risk it is to apply this or this chemical in agricultural lands? So the risk indicators we work with is for mostly four types of contaminants, and it has a scale of 1 to 1 million or a little bit smaller. Which landscape unit that vary between a few hundred hectares to a few thousand hectares in the Prairie province. And we have about 3,000 landscape units to calculate the risk indicator of water contamination. And one of the restrictions we have is that it has to be easy to use. We have to map all the risk across all agricultural lands in Canada. It has to be scientifically based. Has to be sensitive to change in climate and management. And every aspect of it has to be independently calculated. So the transport process that we consider are the atmospheric process and the hydrologic process. I'm going to talk about the hydrologic process here for runoff infiltration and erosion. That are really the transport process. And all this process, obviously, as we talked this morning, has to be connected. They have to have a connectivity factors to the water surfaces. And within these connectivity factors, I'm going to talk about mostly the lateral flow as a connectivity factors. So how can we consider this, the lateral flow process into risk indicators? We can simply use a weight to, if we think that there is preferential flow, increase the risk or decrease the risk, and to use as an additive to other factors, often like they use in GIS technique. It could be a multiplicative factors as we use for the Russell equation, for example, and we use also numerical modeling. But we chose in this way to use an additive multiplicative approach, such as this one. So we developed the transport hydrology equation, and you can see the erosion. Let's see. The erosion, the runoff, and the infiltration. They have been calculated with a numerical model, which is called a VSMB model, mostly developed by Render de Jong, and he ran it for us over the 3,000 units. And this transport factors were related to the hydrology process, to the connectivity process, sorry. And the connectivity process, we have the surface drainage density, we have the topographic index, so this morning we saw that the topography is important. We have the surface drainage density, so how much creeks and rivers we have on that surface, and we have related to the runoff, we have the crack flow and the burrow flow. Those are two preferential flow processes. And with the infiltration, we have tile drainage density because it's a very strong connectivity factors. We have finger flow and lateral flow. So you can see that we have vertical transport and we have a horizontal transport. And the vertical transport, so the lateral flow here help in connecting the vertical transport to the horizontal transport. So all of this equation is the same for all contaminants, but there are the weighting factors that are changing for the contaminants. So if I look at the lateral flow process, we consider in this calculation, as we can, we heard this morning, we have to have a restricted layer. If it's inclined, then it's even stronger lateral flow. If we have trees with decay roots or large permanent roots, it's also increased the lateral flow. But we don't have lateral flow, of course, if we don't have sufficient water infiltration in the process. So we consider all these factors to calculate if we have a risk or not of having lateral flow and then to connect to the surface water. And also, this morning we talked about pipe flow, and we do have pipe flow also in Canada and even in agricultural land, not just in forested lands. So we also consider the possibility of having pipe flows. The pipe flows are mostly related to old forested area that have been cut for protecting the agricultural lands. So one of the problems we have is, as we say, it's fun, we have all the factors, we've chosen the factors, but how are we, what weight will they have in these equations? And each of them needed to be independently calculated because this is a request of the government, so we needed to answer to that request. And there are a lot of factors that we know that are important, but how important are they, and how can we put a quantitative value to these factors? And that's where we had the most difficulties for developing this risk indicators, considering the preferential flow process. So when we look at lateral flow and I put all the important process in it, we need a slope, we need infiltration of water, and this slope has somehow, the importance of the slope will be enhanced if I have a restricting layer or if I have the presence of trees. So either way, if I have both, we consider that we have even more risk of having a preferential flow, bilateral flow. Here I'm not talking about a load or a volume of water, but about the risk that it happens in the field. So we have the infiltration is calculated based on the water budget with a VSMB model, considering what is the surface of each crop on each landscape unit and the stage of the crops, the daily weather data, and storage capacity of the soil, drainage capacity, KS of the soil, and the water retention of the soil, so that we have a water budget, a daily water budget that we did from 1972 to 2006. And so we, for all this, about 25 to 30 years data, we calculate what is the risk of having lateral flow. This data we have a lot of data source because Canada is kind of big, and somehow we need to pick up the data where it exists. We use a national soil layer file, national soil layer components, the census of Canada. We have 5 years of census, the versatile soil moisture budget, which is a VSMB model, the climate data, which is a daily database, the digital elevation model, and all the surface and the drainage density of the system. So we have a whole bunch of data that we use to calculate all this. And when we came out to calculate the restriction of the water flow, we needed to have the type of restricting layer, where it is and where we can find, and also the depth of the restricting layer. So we can see that in Ontario, there is almost no restricting layer. So we are not expecting as much lateral flow as in the eastern province. For those who don't know, this is Ontario and the eastern province, like in Quebec around the St. Lawrence River, where we have a restricting layer just about in all agricultural land. In the prairie province, we don't have as much restricting layers. And in the British Columbia, within the Rocky Mountains, then we have a lot of restricting layer because of we are in the mountain. And then, as you stated this morning, that the restricting layer is not sufficient. The depth of the restricting layer is also important. The shallower soil, the more risk of lateral flow we have, and probably the higher intensity of the flow, of the lateral flow as well. So we look at the depth of the restricting layer, and again, the most problematic fault preference of flow occurs in the eastern province. And then we need to look at the infiltration with the profile, because if we have very shallow soil but no infiltration, that we will not have much lateral flow but mostly runoff at the surface or erosion. But when we look at the rainfall, it rains very, very, very much in eastern province and in Ontario and more in British Columbia. So it increases even more the risk of lateral flow, and it turns out that we could map in the agricultural lands of Canada, we could map the risk of likelihood of lateral flow based on the different process as you explained this morning. So, but this is in a simple way that we want to be easy to use, easy because it's map, and easy to understand as well because it's come out just as a single number over land areas. So. That's it. So if you have any question, there's a limitation, of course, to this work. We have started field work to test if that works, the prediction for lateral flow works fine. And we have started also a comparison with actual water quality data. And it turned out that the preferential flow process were significant, but we didn't test if every separate preferential flow process was significant with actual and old water quality data. And we have also to work on temporal variation within years and between years because it changed the risk classes. We have 5 risk classes for mapping the lateral flow risk. That's it. Thank you.